my name is Ray Jefferson, and you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU FM. This program is a joint effort between KWBU and Creative Waco, where we sit down with leaders and innovators of the arts in our city. I work in marketing and communications at Creative Waco, which is a nonprofit that exists to grow and support the arts in Waco and McLennan County. On this episode, you'll hear a new segment called David and Art with David Smith, who you may be familiar with because of the work that he's done with the Waco Trib. Today on Conversations, we'll hear from Eric Shepard, who's the executive director of the Waco Civic Theater and has also been doing some really cool work with another theater in Killeen. He'll be sharing about the exciting shows and their upcoming theater season this year. First, I'm here with Fiona Bond to talk about the importance of creating opportunities for children to engage in art, as well as a few ways that they can do that this summer. Fiona, thank you for being here today.
Hey, Ray, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Good. So we have a couple really cool things that we're going to talk about today. First off, I kind of want to start with the relationship that exists between creative activities for kids and their development. Mm-hmm. So what are some things that you know about that?
Well, you know, all the research into childhood development and youth development and even character development shows that the arts and creativity are one of the core skills that we need to develop as human beings. And that young people who are exposed, particularly to creative arts-based subjects, thrive much more successfully in terms of their educational outcomes, but also their success when they go on to do higher education and finding a job. That shouldn't be coming as any surprise because, you know, I'm currently doing an MBA at Baylor, and we are hearing all the time from employers in the business community who say that creativity is the most compelling thing that they look for when they're looking for successful candidates mm-hmm. in business. And so not only do we want to create opportunities in our community for kids to engage with arts programs because those help to form them as successful, innovative, creative, wonderful human beings, but also because no matter what area of endeavor they go into as adults, even if they're not wanting to be professional artists, it's a really, really important skill for them to have. Creativity, problem solving, the ability to think outside the box, and also just the ability to know how to have fun, be playful, think in innovative ways. All of those are so important to our success as individuals and also as community.
Sure, sure. And I, if I'm not mistaken, I think there's quite a bit of research that shows that it's pretty easy for kids to start to lose some of those skills over the summertime if they don't continue to really practice them.
Absolutely. And arts-based or creative-based summer camps are a really fantastic way for kids to make sure that they are maintaining their levels, not just of creativity, but also with things like math and science and literacy as well.
Sure. So we at Creative Waco have had the really cool opportunity to create something that we call the Creative Summer Camp Calendar. It's an online resource on our website that allows parents or guardians to go on and search for different creative summer camps that we have around the city of Waco. None of the camps are actually put on by Creative Waco, but it's a resource that points you directly to the various organizations and schools and whatnot that have programming.
And this is kind of a one-stop shop for anyone who has a kid that is interested in creative activities over the summer. So whether it's theater or visual art or dance or filmmaking, science, all of those kinds of endeavors, there is a summer camp out there. In fact, some of the weeks that we have listed for the summer camps, there are 11 or 12 different camps that your kid could be in. And mm-hmm. you can search for summer camps according to the age of the child, the dates that you're wanting to fill, or the art form or the creative activity that they're interested in. It's a fantastic resource. You can find it on creativewaco.org/summercamps. So really easy to find, and you can actually search as pinboard, agenda, or as a monthly calendar. So you choose when you go onto it what format you want to search for the activities on. And I've heard from several people who say they've filled their entire summer activities just from that calendar.
Yeah. Just as a side note, we do have a few camps in there that offer scholarships, as well as some camps that cater to various students that might have special needs.
Special needs, yeah.
And so those are all things that you can search for to find exactly what you're looking for. Fiona, I did want to ask you, you know, there's a wide range of organizations that are on this calendar, from traditional arts organizations to schools to local libraries. What do you think that says about the way that our community feels about creative activities for kids?
I love that there's such a diversity of organizations that are putting on creative summer camps. And I think it shows that, you know, we get when we don't have to cater to specific curriculum, when we are doing summer type activities, we get that those are really rich experiences and that that is where our kids thrive and have fun at the same time. So do check it out. I also wanted to mention that for the very first time this summer, we are hoping to pilot not just the range of opportunities for summer camps that are available for kids, but also for the very first time, a work experience program that is going to be, it's actually one that we've imported from Cincinnati, where they have an incredible mural program, but murals are just the byproduct. The actual program is a work experience program, and it uses murals as a way of teaching young people in high school how to sequence a project from concept to completion. And we're really excited that we get to be piloting that program. If anyone is interested in that program, we're going to have an info session on May the 2nd. You can reach out to us at info@creativewaco.org if you would like to come along to that session.
Sure. We're looking for various educators, arts educators who might be interested in helping to lead that program. As well as, you know, just some other volunteers who would be helpful with
anyone who's interested in engaging that on engaging with that on any level, we'd love to hear from.
Fiona, thank you so much for being here today. We'll be back with Conversations with Creative Waco after a new segment called David and Art with David Smith.
A couple of weeks ago, I had the wonderful treat of catching up with an old friend. He was passing through town, and we met over lunch, the first time we'd seen each other in 20 years. When I lived in Austin, he was the drummer in the band for which I played bass, and we traveled and played all over the state together. Now we immediately fell into reminiscing about gigs and car rides, and it was as if we'd never been apart at all. I have little doubt that if we'd had our instruments, we'd have fallen right back into the groove. As we chatted, we appreciated the unique kind of bond we had formed and continued even now to have based on our years of playing music together. That warm feeling is what philosophers call human flourishing, not just experiencing mere happiness, but a deeper social connection by which we become more, well, human, less materialistic, less the automaton. It's what societies need in order to function. And in our rampantly materialistic society today, it's little wonder that our social fabric is wearing alarmingly thin. Sociologist Robert Putnam labeled these sorts of connection-building activities as social capital and said that we need it every bit as much as we need the more familiar things like physical capital and human capital. There's a difference between creating culture and thinking of it as just something we consume. Making music together is one of those places where our social fabric has frayed. The fraction of households in which even one person plays an instrument fell from over 50% in 1978 to 38% less than 20 years later. We certainly have not lost our taste for listening to music, writes Putnam, but fewer and fewer of us play together. As anyone who's been in a choir, band, orchestra, or ensemble knows, playing music with a group of people is a team-building exercise commensurate with being in a foxhole together. Putnam notes that against the backdrop of our increasingly individualistic understanding of what culture consists of, no longer must we coordinate our tastes and timing with others in order to enjoy the aesthetic and social benefits of music. I'd never considered describing what Steve and I and our bandmates used to do in quite those terms, but that's precisely right. What's more, Putnam continues, electronic technology allows us to consume this hand-tailored entertainment in private, even utterly alone. By contrast, I was interviewing a 1957 graduate of Yale University a couple of years ago about the cultural scene in that decade, and he commented that when the smash hit Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley and the Comets reached New Haven, you could walk all the way across old campus listening to it uninterrupted because it was blaring out of every open window. When we think of art as something that we do that binds us together, our whole society benefits. But when we let the arts atrophy, or think of them as something purely suited to our own individualistic tastes, they can't play the beneficial social role they have the power to perform. And we need a healthy social fabric now, more than ever.
This is Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU-FM. I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. Next up, we have Eric Shepard, who is the Executive Director of the Waco Civic Theater. He's actually in the process of working with two different theaters right now. He's got a lot going on. I'm very excited to have him here today. Eric, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you're working with two different theaters.
Right.
Obviously, the Waco Civic Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then another theater in Killeen.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Circumstance
okay.
developed. The theater in Killeen was likely to close. A section of their board had decided that the organization was no longer financially viable. They held a public meeting at the beginning of August and decided to soldier on and keep the place open. And during that process, they asked me to come back. And my first response was, no, I'm already doing theater work in Waco.
Sure, sure.
And then what I did is I got those two boards of directors together, and they worked out an agreement whereby I would split my time between Waco and Killeen and get Killeen back up on its feet and see where that took us. And in the meantime, maintain our full season of shows in Waco, but we were going to take some of those productions down to Killeen so that the costs of reviving the theater would be somewhat reduced. And the difficulty in mounting an entire season was reduced.
Sure.
And it, so far, it's done pretty well.
Yeah. What have been some of the challenges of splitting your time between two different organizations in two different cities?
I-35 would be high on my list.
Sure.
Yeah. Some of it's travel time.
Okay.
This morning, I've been in Belton and Killeen and now Waco. And I will be here until about 10:30 tonight when we finish rehearsal with Grease, and then we do it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
So part of it is time. Part of it is when the theater was being reorganized in Killeen, there was some hard decision-making, exactly this is going to work with a reduced staff, who might those staff be, what would the role of the board of directors be, because they needed to be more actively involved than they had in the past, and what was the appropriate level of that involvement. And then there was also, I'm having to leave staff in either city for long periods of time. What were they going to do to maintain focus, and what could I delegate to staff members, and what did I need to keep a hold of myself so that the organization, whichever one we were talking about, was most effective. So there was a little bit of bumping around, fumbling in the dark, so to speak, because I'd never done that before. And I'd looked around for other organizations in Texas that had. And the closest I could come was in North Texas. There was a children's theater organization that had sent out satellite offices to other nearby cities. But it was the same organization. It was called the same thing. And it was the same programming. That was the closest parallel I could find. So we sort of had to make up the rules, you know,
sure.
To figure out how this thing was going to work. And I think we got it figured out.
Yeah.
I think it's working okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. So as you've been, you know, doing productions and whatnot in mm-hmm. both of these places, have you noticed any differences between the communities in the two cities whenever you're, you know, deciding on what plays to put on or, you know, things like that?
Yes. For this season, we didn't have a whole lot of choice, and it was interesting to note that sometimes a play was better received in a city 50 miles away than it was in the other city, and sometimes that's a real head-scratcher. the Sherlock Holmes play that we did was well received both places. The musical we did in the fall, which was 60s girls group stuff, wasn't that well received in either city, unfortunately, which was a big surprise to us because we thought it'd be like Beehive, which was a big hit for us and had been a hit in Colleen as well, but it just didn't find traction. So there was similarity in that regard. Sister Act, which we had done 2 years ago in Waco, was also a big hit in Colleen, and,
sure.
and that was hoped for but not expected.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, we just closed a production of Hands on a Hard Body, and it didn't sell nearly as well in Colleen as I thought it would, and it sold better than I thought it would in Waco. So sometimes, you know, the audience surprises you. You just don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, you would think that things that were more appealed to a broader, more working class audience would play better in Colleen than Waco, but not in this case.
Sure.
And it's Texas, and I thought Texas plays in Texas, right?
Yeah. So how do you guys go about deciding which works you're going to bring each season?
Part of it has to do with my apparently imprecise guess on what an audience wants to hear. Part of it is the talent that's available.
Okay.
Because of the military, the population in Colleen is much more diverse than it is in Waco. It's also much younger. It is my fifth youngest county in the state.
Wow.
And so appealing to younger audiences is definitely the way to go there. Children's theater, for instance, when we did Your Good Man Charlie Brown in Colleen in the fall, we had 11 parts in that play, and we had to find all of the ways to incorporate as many kids as we could. And so the director cast 39 kids in that show.
Wow.
Double cast the show.
Sure.
So that participation would be there, and did terrific at the box office. And the same is true of Seussical this spring. It's a children's theater production, and again, a smaller cast is called for, but the directors got together and decided they had to have at least 45 kids in this show. So that shows you the desire in Colleen to have programming for kids. And it's already selling really, really well, and it doesn't open for another 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So that's a difference between the communities. Another, I think, is that the level of interest in theater as an art form is a little bit higher in Waco than it is in Colleen. There's different kinds of competition for people's attention, especially, I think, because of the recent history of the organization in Colleen was that the fortunes of the theater were declining, and so fewer and fewer people were going. And it's been a challenge to get some of those folks back and to widen the appeal. And theater as an art form has that same problem. I mean, not every show is Hamilton, so not everyone says, oh, I got to go to the theater.
Yeah.
And if you've lost some of those people because the shows weren't up to par, or they couldn't get the talent to make the shows up to par, or it wasn't funded at a level that made it what people expected out of a theatrical experience, then you have to win them back, or you have to convince new people to come to the theater. Fortunately, in Colleen, the population turns over fairly often because of the military. So given a period of time, somewhere around, you know, a third of the population will have moved on to another military installation. And so that's a new audience to educate. And that's a new audience that doesn't have any experience of the theater not being at its peak level of performance.
Sure. That's interesting. That's really cool.
So
you guys recently released the upcoming season for the Waco Civic Theater.
That's right.
I'm excited because I know you guys have some really good shows that are coming up with that.
Yes, we are excited. I was thinking there was another question there about that. You were going to say, oh, I want to go see that show or be in that show.
Yeah.
Hint, hint.
Well, I'm not an actress, but definitely love theater. So you guys have The Wizard of Oz, mm-hmm. Newsies, Once, Steel Magnolias, Shakespeare in Love, and Mamma Mia, which is a fantastic lineup.
Thank you.
Which is there one of these that you're like the most excited about?
Once.
Okay.
I think I'm most excited about that show. I saw it in New York and liked it very, very much. I was getting a haircut, and the guy who was cutting my hair said that he took his dad to go see it, who doesn't like theater and doesn't really like that he's living in New York City because he's from New Mexico, and thought, why do you have to move across the country and to New York City? And so he took his dad to see that show, and his dad just loved it.
Yeah.
And this was – I was getting my haircut before I saw that show, so I was already excited to see it. Then I went to go see it, and George Bernard Shaw says there's two kinds of people in the world, those who are Irish and those who wish they were. I'm in the latter category. And while I was in that show, I was sure that my fate was somehow twisted and I should have been in Dublin the entire time in my life because it just spoke to me. Mm-hmm. The music's so beautiful. The story's gorgeous. And it has an unexpected ending.
For anyone who's not familiar with the piece, can you just kind of give a summary of what it's about?
It's about an Irish songwriter who's lost his girlfriend, who's just moved to the United States. And then he meets another lover of music who is a Czech immigrant. And she's also very musically talented. And they have this romance throughout the course of the show that's expressed primarily through music. And there's ethnic music in the show because you hear Czech music sung in Czech. There's also contemporary dance. So it's like a musical theater dance that accompanies some of the numbers. And the musicians are actors and dancers. They're on stage the entire time. And so a performer will be an actor. He's a banker in one scene, and the next scene he's a studio musician. You know? And the next thing, and next scene he's part of the a cappella chorus of a beautiful song. And all of it is set in a single location that they just move chairs in and out, and you go, okay, well, now it's the bank, or now it's their apartment, or now it's the recording studio. And so the action is continuous. It's funny, it's witty, it's touching, it pulls at your heartstrings, and it's a really unique theatrical experience. So much so that one of the people who was involved in it, who's a Baylor Theater grad, Elizabeth Davis, who moved to New York and got a part in the show and then later won a Tony as a part of being in that show, was inspired to write a musical based on her experiences with Once and her experiences here in Waco with Mission Waco. So she combined her personal non-theatrical experience with her theatrical experience to create a unique work of art that is uniquely her, that is uniquely Waco, that has a strong influence from the singer-songwriter tradition.
Sure.
And it has led to other things. That's one of the reasons that it's such a powerful piece of art. It's also incredibly emotional. Men will sit there and tear up. Some may actually cry, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that people not knowing the title, I hope that we can overcome that unfamiliarity. Like, it's not Steel Magnolias, you know, which is on TV all the time.
Yeah.
But people will give it a chance and be as moved as audiences have been. We are among the very first, if not the first, community theaters in the country to do this show. And I'm so excited about the opportunity to do that show.
Yeah.
It's unique in its approach to storytelling. And I think it's all the best things that theater can be.
Sure. And are any of these plays that are going to be here this season also going to be in Killeen?
Yes. Steel Magnolias, which I just mentioned, would be one of those. And then one you mentioned just a minute ago, Mamma Mia, will also be there. Another interesting local connection with Mamma Mia is that there's an actor who started here. They were actually on our stage and also was with Waco Children's Theater, who later went on to have a theatrical career. She was in the very last cast of Mamma Mia before the show closed several years ago in New York. I got to meet her. She and her husband took my wife and I backstage, and we got to meet members of the cast. And she is going to come back and assist us with this production.
Awesome.
So, yeah, her name's Jennifer Tusa Hemphill. And there will be people who know that name.
Sure.
Who grew up in Waco or ran across her or her family. And we're excited to bring her back to have a role in continuing to create theater in Waco. So there's a kind of a theme that runs through the season in that there are people who've gone out into the big wide world who were Waco artists who are now coming back to give back to the community and help foster that same kind of growth here. So it's really humbling and exciting to be a part of.
Yeah, awesome. That's so great. As I've talked to you, you know, about this upcoming season, you've seemed like you're very excited about it.
Oh, just a wee bit.
Yes. And you know, as we were talking earlier before we started recording, you had mentioned that one of your goals this year is to you know, get some interaction between audiences here in Waco in terms of going out to Killeen to see productions, as well as audiences in Killeen going or coming here to see productions in Waco. Can you talk about why you feel that that's important to get, you know, people kind of involved in theater across our region here?
I think that there are such great advantages to working together. One of them is the economic advantage, because if a community theater often is strapped for its resources and has to reuse the same costume or sofa or set piece or store paint for 5 years, hoping you can use it again because you just don't want to waste the money, you know, that you spent on it. And so theater's ability to be able to take advantage of each other's experience with costumes, props, sets, whatever, is really, really helpful. It also allows each community to experience the benefits of the talent of the neighboring community. And part of the joy of community theater is seeing someone who might be your pastor or dental hygienist on stage. And part of it is that you know that you're seeing work that's meaningful. And we don't have to have it be our pastor. It's helpful, you know.
Yeah.
But knowing that that person came from Central Texas, knowing that that person is sharing their talent is still as interesting and moving in another way as it is to see a professional do it, but you don't have to drive to Dallas.
Sure.
You know? And so we're stronger in that we're able to take advantage of the strengths that each community has. And we're able to open our horizons just a little bit and maybe go to Temple, go to Waco, go to Killeen to see a show because the show is meaningful.
Yeah, awesome. So, you know, you've kind of talked a little bit about community theater, some of the challenges mm-hmm. that come with that. What are some of the most difficult aspects of, you know, running a community theater and, you know, maybe working with performers that aren't necessarily professionals, you know, things like that?
Well, primarily, I guess it's that the conception of doing theater or doing community theater is that we're an entertainment company mm-hmm. and we're a community resource. But as an entertainment company, that's almost secondary to the mission we have to make our community better. And some people come into it with that attitude, either into the audience or come into a show with the idea that they're going to be a star.
Yeah.
Or that the other people are not, mm-hmm. you know, which is the other side of the coin as well. And so you've got the mistaken identity in some cases of what a community theater is. You might have an actor say, well, you know, this is a hobby for me. You know, I can only do this on weekends. And then you have to say to them, yes, but the people who come on Friday night are expecting you to be the absolute best that you can be.
Sure.
They shouldn't know that you really haven't worked on this show or really remembered it. They should feel like you've given 100% of your effort to make this experience for them meaningful. Another would be that sometimes there are so many things that we do in the world, it's hard to get a cast together.
Sure.
Next week, we're supposed to be doing run-throughs for Greece, and with so many other competing events, we're not going to have our full cast together except for one day next week to rehearse. Every other day, there's going to be significant members of it missing. And, you know, if you know your kid is sick or you've got to teach Bible school or whatever, there's just not much that can be done about that. And we appreciate the time that people give us. And sometimes that coming together isn't perfectly dovetailed. And so that's always a challenge.
Sure. Just to wrap things up, mm-hmm. I did want to make sure that for anyone who wants to be involved with
yes.
any of these productions, where can they go to find out about auditions and all of that?
Well, if you're in Killeen, VLAKilleen.org is their website. If you're in the Waco area, WacoCivicTheater.org. And of course, if you're in either city, you should definitely check out the other theater's website. But there are so many things that people can do. They can paint, saw, hammer, nail, sew, act, sing, dance, sell tickets, open the door, sell concessions. There's lots to do at a community theater. So anyone who's got any skill at all can find a place there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Eric, for being here today and giving us an update on this work that you're doing in our region.
Thank you.
You can visit wacocivictheater.org for the full 2018-2019 season here in Waco. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for a recap of this conversation. Catch the next episode on Friday, May 25th at 11:30 a.m. and 8 p.m. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU-FM. I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. Thanks for tuning in.